this grand piece by this only.
Okay. Is this good?
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. And if you talk about positively minded living, you've got to throw into that formula somewhere Dr. Candace Pert. Candace, welcome to New York. You're right here, and you just had a New York experience, didn't you?
Yes, glad I could run the last 10 blocks.
They thought it was simple. They said, oh, we'll just go from 14th Street to 57th Street in 5 minutes. That's all it should take. Candace, what the bleep do I know? Should I know what the bleep? That is, I tell you, when the movie came out, it was such a hit, and everybody started seeing it, and they started seeing your work in there, you know? And then later on Bill Moyer, it kind of came out again. And here you are, this nice, innocent molecular biologist who's taking a different look at the world and making a difference and suddenly becoming very, very popular because of some of what you've seen. So I'd like to just start our audience, who's maybe not all be familiar with you, but many of us are, molecular biology and how that relates to why is it so interesting in what you're talking about.
Right. Well, I guess I'm classically trained as a psychopharmacologist, but of course molecular biology is, you know, the molecules, and I'm kind of an expert on the molecules of emotion, and the movie is seeks. I mean, it's really got a lot of people very, very excited. I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it explores the interface between spirituality and science. And in my work, my life work, trying to understand the emotions, having first worked with the endorphins and the opiate receptor, I see the emotions as the bridge between the physical molecular realm and the spiritual realm. Does that help? Or?
It's almost there. We're getting there. Okay, so no, I understand it, and that's the problem. The problem is I understand it. What I want to make sure everybody does get it. So there you are. We're talking about a world of the human emotions, and you are focusing on emotions, but not just focusing on emotions as something that people feel, you know, and it's just, you know, some people are moody and other people are not moody, but you see it as the bridge between the body and the spirit.
At least it started as a bridge between the mind and the body, those actual molecules. But in my new book, I mean, I'm starting to think about not just the molecular aspect of the emotions, but the electromagnetic, the electronic, the vibrational, if you will, that properties of the emotions, so that they could be the link between body and soul.
Let's get real specific. Childhood trauma and molecular biology. What relationship could there possibly be? Now, mind you, I'm asking you my innocent Columbo question. Depression and childhood trauma, how could they be related?
Oh, well, they are very closely related. The new information shows that people who tend to be depressed have had a severe childhood trauma. It's predictive. And molecularly, there's a certain hormone called CRF that's found to be enhanced in people who are depressed. It's found elevated in people who actually commit suicide. I don't ever want to oversimplify. I mean, you know, when we started with the endorphins, everything was endorphins is the cause of everything. But this CRF stuff, this stress peptide, and the work linking it to depression and childhood trauma, I think is pretty profound and interesting.
CRF, which is present in most of the some of the worst conditions. I always thought it meant crummy, rotten fluid. What does CRF stand for?
I think it stands for cortisol releasing factor.
Am I right? So the cortisol now cortisol.
My cortisol levels are high right now.
Getting the adjustment going. Cortisol. Yes. Cortisol suddenly is taking a front picture here. We're now taking a look and we're saying, oops, we got to keep an eye on cortisol. And cortisol as the stress factor, right? Cortisol as the experience, the hormone that people feel when they're stressed. But they also feel it. You also need cortisol, don't you?
Sure. It's not all. It's very yin-yang. All of these substances are yin-yang. I mean, it's much more of a cocktail. You know, I've talked about the molecules of emotion, and there's probably, you know, hundreds of them. And it's more like a complicated cocktail mixture. And it's more like an orchestra, like a symphony. You know, vibrations, not just molecules floating around either. Because molecules have electronic properties.
And when they have electronic properties, how that's relative, is that what? We interface with electronic properties?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm interfacing right now. We're interfacing with each other. I mean, some phenomenon. You know, I'm still a little nervous talking about all this. I mean, I came in being the straight pharmacologist, biochemist, East Coast, definitely non-woo-woo Californoid, but the more that I've learned and experienced and had the privilege of working with healers who use energy medicine, the more I'm totally 100% convinced this is real, and our job is to figure out how does this work, not to question whether it works or not.
As a psychopharmacologist, originally you're interested in all these new serotonin effects and all this stuff that's coming around. I'm sure we have a lot of friends in common. Hyla Cass and people like
that. Oh, Hyla is a good friend of mine.
Is Hyla a good friend of yours?
She's wonderful. Uh-huh.
I've known Hyla for many, many years.
She's helping my son out in L.A. area. That's Brandon Pert.
What is Brandon Pert doing?
Brandon just graduated from Valencia. From CalArts, where he's a music technology major. He has this fancy degree. He does the music. He does the technology. He does post-production, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think right now he's doing soundtracks for soap operas and hoping to move soon to MTV. But movie soundtracks.
Brandon. He's moving the molecular, the molecules of music, which are very important, the molecules of music, as they affect our mood, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you think there's a molecular interchange between listening to music and the experience of well-being? Do you think, I mean, what connects it? What
makes absolutely. It work? I mean, one of the things that I recently realized that kind of blew me away, I don't want to get too technical into the neurophysiology, but, you know, every ion channel, when you vibrates at the same frequencies, you know, all the neurotransmitters play with it, but the range of frequencies that it vibrates at is the same range of frequencies that we can hear. So we don't really just hear with our ears. We have the potential to hear with every single cell in our body. So the music that we, quote, listen to, we're listening with our whole body-mind, I call it. And so you can really impact and access any aspect of our psychosomatic network and get right in there and change things.
Why do you think people have preferences for one form of music over another? Do you think it's, once again, the lock and key theory? Do you think it's like there's a key inside you for one kind of music? And
that's interesting. Definitely. People are attracting what they need for their healing is one way that my friends on the West Coast talk about it. Another way is there is a subconscious drive to get what we need to reenact or complete our core traumas, our inner healing. And yes, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, all the booming, you know, my generation needed that steady rock and roll boom to wake us up. Another generation goes for the chaos, the classical. Some of us, like me, I like virtually every kind of music at different times, depending on which of my multiple personalities.
Well, now you move into an area that I think is fascinating. Candace Bird, I noticed you wanted no artificial sweetener in your tea.
Oh, hey, God, come on,
we got to do it. I just got to get you on one of your spots, aspartame. Let's talk to the group about aspartame and what the plan is. The other day I was looking at a new light, low-calorie yogurt, and it was so good. It said all natural, all wonderful, and it had something called plaspartame. They changed the name just a little bit so that it didn't look like aspartame. Why? Why you and aspartame?
Well, aspartame is something that I had not... It's what radicalized me to speak out. And it's very timely to talk about aspartame since Donald Rumsfeld resigned yesterday.
Why is that? How is that related? Because he was some kind of an aspartame?
He was actually the CEO of Searle.
Searle
was trying to get aspartame through the FDA. It was actually, the FDA stalled it for some 15 years or so. But on the day after Ronald Reagan, because there were so many questions about the side effects, but on the day after that Reagan was elected president, there was a new FDA, either a commissioner or some little wrinkle there, and then it was waved through. And it was approved. That was around 1983, I guess. But the reason I got into it is I always thought it was very healthy for me, better than Coke, and I used to use it as my drink. And it's a dipeptide. And since I'm an expert in peptides, people would often ask me about it, and I'd say, well, I'd give it as an example. It's a dipeptide. And then, you know, I talk about it in Everything You Need to Know to Feel Good.
Right, and this is your latest book, right? Everything You Need to Know to Feel Good, with the one of the O's in parentheses, meaning Everything You Need to Know to Feel God, which I thought was very brave as a title.
It scared me. I like to scare myself.
So aspartame, yes. So now you are a microbiologist. You do chemistry. You're a psychopharmacologist. You're a whole bunch of other things. Everybody should know that. Credentially, Candace Pert, in case you need to know, professor of Georgetown University School of Medicine, section chief, National Institute of Mental Health, and so on and so on and so on and so forth. You know, Marilyn Ferguson mentioned you in the new book. I saw your name passing through there somewhere in Aquarius now.
Yes.
So Candace latches onto this thing, and what was the shock of it? Because it really kind of, aspartame moved you right through your life.
It moved me because if something introduced, I met somebody on one of my lectures who had wound up in a wheelchair with what looked like a rapidly developing multiple sclerosis, and she intuitively completely stopped and recovered. And, I met her and started to research it. And I was shocked to find out that there's a little chemical group on this dipeptide, which turns into wood alcohol, which turns into formaldehyde in people. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And as I look closer at it, of course, there's just so much data. I mean, this substance has had more complaints about it than anything in the history of the FDA, and yet it's a multi-ton, million-dollar-a-year business. And as you say, it sneaks up on you.
It's woven itself into all the so-called organic produce that's out there. You know, whenever you get these lower calories, less fat, and now we'll call it something else.
It's in all the diabetic recipes, and people are being, people think it's healthy for them.
So as a dipeptide, what does a dipeptide do to you? Do the effect of formaldehyde, which is in effect, just pickle you?
That's just one part of it. The two amino acids are called excitatory amino acids, and they're there in quite large quantities. And there's a lot of data suggesting they can kill neurons. But what really got me was this methanol group ending and the change to formaldehyde and the idea that you could pickle things. And then I do my own little market research and started talking to people, and it was amazing. People who have bloodshot eyes, and there's, you know, reports that it actually causes damage to the eyes and bleeding in the eyes, and I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff on it. You can find it all over. There's a publication record. So the way it worked for me, you know, I always want to be balanced, and I want the last scientific proof in there before I would say anything. But when I became convinced of this, and someone actually was died of an overdose. I talk about it in the book, and his wife was arrested for murder, which she definitely didn't commit. And since all of that is in, I mean, it was crystal clear to me. So I said, well, goodness, if you can have something like this that's so ubiquitous, which is a food, and it's in there, then there's something radically wrong here. And then I've just begun to speak out more and pay attention more to the things I know as a biochemist and pharmacologist and just as a, you know, a mature scientist who's able to understand the literature that something's screwy.
Yes, Candace Pert, who is, where do you hail from? California now, right?
I wish. No, I'm still a prisoner on the East Coast. I come from the fabulous city of Change, right outside of Washington, D.C., where I've been for the last 30 years.
What's the city of Change?
Washington, D.C.
Oh, the city of Change. You're in Washington, D.C. And you know all our West Coast friends, too?
Well, in my journeys, I've done a lot of travel and lecturing on the West Coast, and that's what's so exciting right now. This movement, which is going on, which I guess the best way that I can encapsulate it is consciousness creates reality. The mind really matters, and it kind of really jump started on the West Coast. And I used to feel very schizophrenic, and the late Willis Harmon used to say, you knew him too, I thought.
Of course.
And of course I know Marilyn. He used to say that, Candace, you have a different personality. You have a West Coast and an East Coast personality. But it's all coming together now. You can still be a real scientist and look at things critically and understand this. It comes from Eastern thought and Eastern tradition, and perhaps it started in California, jump-started because of the proximity to Asia, the climate. But it's a major paradigm shift.
The major paradigm shift is because there's been so much recent validation from the scientific community, from neuroscience, from macrobiology, microbiology, biological sciences. We're now looking and saying, oh, all that stuff that we thought was made up and airy-fairy seems to have some truth to it. Now, let's take a look at Helen Sidra, okay? Wow. Let's talk about Helen Sidra Stone and what you did with them and how this worked with your perceptions about the human body.
Right. Well, can I ask you first, did you actually know them as friends or study with them?
I knew them as friends, and I also had a couple of students who studied with them, and they were here, and they were on this program a few times.
I see.
Yes, it must have been at least 10 years ago.
Right. Well, I consider them, I think that their brand of psychotherapy is the leading edge, the ultimate leading edge. They call it voice dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told by others.
Anna, yes, one of their leading voice dialogue people worked here for a period of time. Her name will come to me in a couple of minutes.
Right.
That's how I knew them, and I met her through this person who was working here and teaching us voice dialogues and so on and so forth. But this was a body-mind approach.
Yes, absolutely, and it also is the spiritual piece. Some people call it gestalt therapy with the spirit piece put in. And, you know, in gestalt, you know, it's recognized we all have different parts to ourselves. I mean, the CEO at the board meeting is not the same person as she is at home nursing her 2-year-old. So, you know, we have these multiple types of personalities, even though the phrase multiple personality is usually applied to pathological. But
the pathological with the total dissociation in the middle is why they call it MPD. But you've addressed MPD as a different thing as well. You've said, no, there are many parts to the personality, instead of multiple personalities, probably many part disorder, you know. There are many parts, and the parts are alienated from each other. And I know what Hal and Sidra, the idea of their work is bring the parts of you together. Just like you were saying about being on the West Coast and being on the East Coast.
Right.
And being able to create some kind of harmonic experience of yourself.
Right, exactly. And that word integration, to make whole, and whole and healing, you know, they're the same root word, and that's really what it's all about. So all of your parts can come together, I guess.
How do you see this on a molecular level? I want to talk about it for a minute. Let's see, I've got one part of my personality that gets very, very angry when I'm driving down the road, and then I see somebody coming by and I get really mad and I scream, and then I got another part of me that's going to pick up a little kitten and I'm going to pet it and I'm going to say, oh, you poor little beautiful kitten. And then I have another part of me that is highly functional, invests in the stock market, and then I got another part of me that is giving it different agencies and doing what I can. And these are all, they feel like almost different personalities as I move at a different speed and a different temperament through life, being who I am. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about alter
self? Yeah,
I am.
I think the key is, and I've lectured about this and I talk about this and develop it in the book in a fun way. The book's not a textbook. It's my own personal journey of the last year, which has been pretty darn intense. In one sentence, it's emotions are the key, and emotions trigger altered states of consciousness. Now, here's the key part. Each with different memories, behaviors, even body postures. So I've been thinking and building this theory for many, many years before I had ever heard of Hal and Sidra Stone. It's almost, sometimes I think when I'm giving a lecture I'm channeling, you know, and then people will come up to me afterwards and say, did you ever hear of Hal and Sidra Stone? You know, they live 2 miles from here. You know, you're in Mendocino. I'm like, no, I never heard of them. Well, you've got to meet them. And then the next day I'm meeting them. But the key is that many, many years ago, when I was associated with the Bryn Mawr psychology department, I had heard a lecture by Donald Overton, who's he works with rats and people, and he has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt this idea of dissociated states of learning, which is very rigorously done, a whole literature. If you learn in one state, you can only retrieve that memory if you're in that same state. So like one way I say it is if you're a student and you're studying for an exam, you better have, if you're going to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes while you're studying, make sure that you're going to be able to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes while you're taking the exam. Because depending on how those drug receptors, this was all about drugs, how those drugs are on board and what receptors they're vibrating and how the whole organism is going, that will put you in this, quote, state, almost like a quantum state or a crystalline state. Now, the piece that I did for years and years was to learn that, hey, drugs, emotions, you know, they're really the same thing. All drugs work. All drugs are psychoactive to a certain extent, not the ones whose receptors are on the microbes, but all drugs whose receptors are in our body are psychoactive because the receptors are throughout the brain and body. And our emotions have receptors throughout the brain and body, and they're the same ones. This, I call it the psychosomatic network. And, you know, opiate receptors, they're in your brain, they're in your immune cells. We have natural endorphins, we have exogenous chemicals. So whether we're talking drugs or whether we're talking emotions, both are able to trigger altered states of consciousness with different memories, proven solid as a rock, behaviors, of course. body postures, you know? That spinal cord's pretty important. I mean, people change before your very eyes. And I think this is a very, you know, it's a way that healthy people can feel better about themselves and understand themselves better. This isn't some weird thing. I think this is, you know, it helped my son, who's very, very solid. He said, gee, you know, that helps me kind of think about all the ways I can be.
If people are listening right now and you just wanted to play around with this a little bit, you can ask yourself this simple question that I've liked to ask myself. I was taught to me by Peter Hogan, where he used to say, how old are you right now? And he would say, based on myself, based on the way I'm looking, based on the way I am physically structured, sitting in my chair, how old am I right now? Many of you listening, you might ask that question. How old are you right now? What do you feel? And you could very see either you're feeling chipper and 15 years old, or you're feeling like a 4-year-old who's listening to something you don't understand, and you could locate an age. And one of the tricks we used to do was to ask people to sink into that age. Instead of just being you trying to listen to what's going on, be that thing completely. Go into that completely and discover that part of you. And each one of these, every time you ask the question, how old are you right now, you discover a part of you, because all day long, you're many different ages. All day long, you could be 10, you could be 20, you could be 15, you could be 5, you could be 2. You know, and I think you're right. With each of these ages comes a posture. And the posture is usually your key to that self. Now, what I think you're saying that's really beautiful is that, Candace, is that the we have a way of merging these. I remember in the work with multiple personality, one of the goals was always to create some kind of a synthesis, some kind of a meeting, a marriage of the personalities. Because even though there's always one that's very destructive, it can't be cast out. It will usually be the one that is necessary for other reasons, even though it may not be destructive. So you're suggesting, well, the work of Hal Stone and some of the work that you've discovered are ways of bringing these different pieces of self together.
Right, right. Yeah, oh, that was good what you were saying. Yeah, I'm a basic scientist, you know, rats, test tubes, microscopes, the whole shebang. So mine is more, my theories are theories based about mechanism. You know, I'm not a therapist.
How many alternate personalities can a rat have? Have you seen, wait a minute now. I worked with Charles River breeding mice because they were known to have the least changes.
Well, they don't, yeah, right, you're right. But what's so interesting, biochemically, though, their opiate receptors are virtually identical to the ones that you have. I mean, biochemically, these molecules of emotion are so important that they're stable for eons of evolution.
So we have neurotic mice, we have proud mice, we have show-off mice.
Well, we have anxious mice. I talk about this in my lectures. You know, anxiety. There's an anxiety peptide that binds to the Valium receptor. And you have to be at least a teleost fish, a bony fish, before you've got this receptor in your brain, because anxiety is very advanced. You have to be able to have enough cortex to make decisions, to be in conflict about decisions. Sorry, you were about to say something.
No. Well, what I'm actually about to say is, because it is 1:30, we have to take a brief break. By the way, Candace, if people have to learn us, leave us, it is Candace Pert at...
No, just CandacePert.com.
CandacePert.com, P-E-R-T.
Like the shampoo, Candace
Pert. C-N-D-A-C-E.
Yeah, Ace Not Ice.
Ace Not Ice. And Pert like the shampoo?
Yeah, just like it.
Is Pert a shampoo?
Yeah.
What do I know?
A terrible shampoo.
What do I know? Because it's got aspartame.
It's got a bunch of other stuff in it that's outrageous.
We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends.
Only you can decide which star shines brightest, which pair of angel wings you wear. forgiveness for all whose lives you shed. Only your voice can break through the silence and be heard. Trust each choice you make to bring your heaven to your earth. Honor who you are. Honor who you are becoming. Trust life in its brilliant unfolding, and change will take you fast and far. Honor who you are. Only your life can be the gift you intended to give so graciously, and grace opens our eyes.
Thank you very much, Candace Pert. Now, this is from your album that you recently released, Psychosomatic Wellness, which is about healing yourself on so many different levels. I know so many people who are sick. And who are the people who are singing there? What were their names?
Well, that's a mysterious singer there. We don't know her name because she's under contract and she couldn't divulge that.
Mysterious singer.
Yes, but that was I have to remember the name of the woman who wrote the song, who was from Hawaii, who magically it came my way.
It's all right. We will definitely give credit to it, and we'll
put it
on.
But that's my brother-in-law, Joe Fitzgerald, on bass.
Hey, all right, Joe Fitzgerald
from
on
the
bass.
Big
nice
Apple.
Work. And so this is Armand DeMille with Candace Pert. In case you're not familiar with Candace Pert, there is a film at least that you should have seen by now, one of the most important films, which is called What the Bleep Do We Know? And then there was some significant work. As there was some focus on her work as being aware of science and biology, and she's written a book called The Molecules of Emotion. And The Molecules of Emotion is just exactly what it sounds like. It's saying, you know, all of this stuff is in effect chemistry. Now, a little earlier today, I spoke to a guy who came in and he says, I've got trouble with cocaine and marijuana. I want to be able to stop. And I said to him, I said, well, it just makes all the sense in the world. In the environment that you were in, I said, look at the environment that you're in. The environment you were brought up in, you had to do one of two things. Either you had to change the world or you had to change yourself. And you were a kid. So what you did was you did chemistry to yourself. Everybody around you was doing chemistry. I said, so you found different ways. You thought Coca-Cola with its sugar and its caffeine helped you out, and you liked that, so you did that. And then you took a couple of other things. You smoked some marijuana. You smoked some cigarettes, and you found out that kind of helps your mood. And then you learned that you could take cocaine, and that, number one, picks up your mood, and that makes you feel better about being in the world. But that wasn't good enough because it didn't have any control. So you took some alcohol to bring down the mood. But then after it brought down the mood, when it started to wear off, you decided you had to smoke a little grass to pick up your mood again. And then as soon as you did that, you decided, well, maybe we had better put some more cocaine back in it. And you got into this place that so many people get into, which is doing your chemistry. Well, okay, that makes sense to me. It makes sense. Now you don't want to do that anymore. So you've got to find an alternative. And in order to cross over from that chemical dependence on things that could kill you, right, to a place where you could heal yourself on a different level. And I want to talk about arthritis and your work with that. We have Candace Pert, who says you can focus on it in a different way. And if you focus on it, you could bring yourself into harmony with the world and your body. Mm. And there are very small changes that you make. Now, some of them, for sure, nutritionally, you believe in certain things. Let's talk about what you think is everybody's got to have.
Well, I just loved all the things you said. The kid that was doing the Coca-Cola, and he was actually, years ago, was doing cocaine, because actually cocaine was part
Coca-Cola,
of the secret
sure.
recipe. And then I recently learned that even today's Coca-Cola recipe, the secret Coke syrup is actually, after the cocaine is extracted from the cocoa leaves, that which is left, that residue, is part of the flavoring syrup in the secret recipe.
And a little more than flavoring syrup. You know what I mean? It's going to have a little more effect than just flavoring, because any chemical you put in anything that somebody puts in their body is going to have an effect. And I'm sure it's not so benign, because we wouldn't be addicted to Coca-Cola if it was that benign.
Right. Well, the caffeine itself, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's not, this is, don't do this and do that, not don't do that. It's not about this, that, but it is, we have to realize how much of what we consider normal are really drugs. And, I mean, great advice to feel good is to give up your addictions. And, you know, a cool thing that happened to me like 30 years ago is somebody told me I was addicted to coffee. I said, don't be ridiculous, coffee. He said, just try it. Go without it for 5 days and see what happens. And you'll have a headache. And I did, and then I, like, worked through it. And that was decades before. Now it's known that coffee works on all these adenosine receptors, all your excitatory neurotransmitters. And, you know, when some people need a cup of coffee just to wake up. And I don't know. It seems, doesn't it seem like people are more and more stressed and feeling lousy, and addictions are on the rise? I mean, isn't there more and more of that in our culture now?
It seems to be the more complex we get, the more addictions are on the rise. So, you know, a famous nutritionist I knew once said, if you're going to put one chemical in your body, if you're going to take only one thing, don't let it be vitamin C. He said, let it be glutathione, because he believed that glutathione would have a better effect on your entire body if you weren't going to take anything else. Do you have any such things that you believe about what you should do nutritionally that is just kind of essential? Do you say, I know one you do.
What's
I know
that?
What you say.
What's
don't
that?
Eat aspartame.
Yeah, well, that's more
stay
of,
away that, from
yeah,
diet
well, that's
sodas.
More of a, that's more of a negative.
That's
I mean,
a don't.
I've had a privilege, you know. People send me all kinds of things. There's just no doubt that you know, supplements can change your life. And God, there's the don't. The big don't is aspartame. The other I talk about in Everything You Need to Know to Feel Good is the trans fats. And in this great city where I'm sitting right here, that's the you know, the polyunsaturated the trans fat that are in everything. And in this great city, there's a debate about the restaurants should take it out. And I've read the writings on that, but they don't quite really get it, because they're talking about leaving it in for flavor. And that's all baloney. The whole purpose of the trans fats is to stop decomposition and increase shelf life So it's a way to, you put it in things in the supermarket, and it's in everything. Every cake mix, virtually everything that comes in a box has trans fats in it these days. And boy, you need microscopic vision to read those labels down to the bitter end. But it's been proven that, I mean, they're totally unnatural. Your body has no enzymes to handle it, so it just gets stuffed. It's junk, and it gets stuffed into crevices, and it winds up causing inflammation, and it's directly linked with inflammation, I think, not just me. I talk about it a bit in the new book, but neuroscientists, biotech people, everybody is talking about inflammation as the root cause of so many diseases today, from Alzheimer's disease to
arthritis. And
you got it.
It's crippling. So why would you, and what would you do? What would you do? How do you remove the trans fats? Do you break open the package and throw away the trans fats and eat the rest of it?
No. Once I had the privilege of meeting Norman Cousins. Well, I knew Norman, and I knew his wife. And his wife, we were in some store together, and I picked something up, and she said, throw that out. And she said, never buy anything from a box. I thought she was nuts. This was quite a while ago. But no, it starts at the supermarket. You just have to read all the labels, but basically it comes down to whole produce. I mean, just go back in time, if possible.
So if you go to your supermarket and you look on the box and it says trans fats 0.1.00, I mean, what are you going to look for?
Yeah.
What are you going to allow? What are you going to throw out? Throw out everything in a box.
There's no tolerated level. Partially hydrogenated fats is the other term. You can't have any of it. And there is some tricky stuff that it's, you know, they can, if it's...
Reword it, rename it.
Well, they, if it's less than a certain percentage, they don't have to... They're even allowed to claim zero. It's very tricky. So you know, it's almost like you just have to read every single word in there. It's based on a portion size, but I don't know about you. I'm good, but if I slip from the, if I fall off the wagon, I easily can eat a whole box of chocolate chip cookies. The portion size may be one cookie, but, you know, that'll, if there's anything in it at all, it's like, what's the tolerated dose of rat poison? I mean, is it 1 milligram or is it a tenth of a milligram? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And it's, boy, I can't believe I'm saying all this, but WBAI.
This is WBAI. This is the most important station in the world.
I love this station when I used to, I'm from New York.
Yeah, and you could get us on computer. You know, so Candace, let's go, talking with Candace Pert. So now how about enzymes? How about antidotes? I used to talk to you, I'm sure this is one person you don't know that you should know, Cherry Quincy. Dr. Cherry Quincy out there in California. Oh, she is fantastic. Uh-huh. Cherry, I said, Cherry, why don't you write a book of antidotes?
Uh-huh.
Why don't you, since you're so good on saying all the things that people have, if they're going to do drugs, if you're going to do cigarettes, if you're going to do this, what should you do while you're doing the things you do? Most of the world just judges people and say, well, if you're going to smoke cigarettes, there's no hope for you. We're not going to tell you increase your B vitamins, try a little of this, try a little of that, because it's all chemistry. Maybe you can neutralize some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you neutralize the trans fats? What do you need?
Well,
you got to eat
not,
a box of peptides?
I don't want to go there. It's just about elimination. There's people who are called environmental doctors. There's a resource in the back of everything, you know, to feel good. There's a group of several pages of organizations I've lectured to, and there's the environmental doctors. I mean, the key thing is you do have to get them out. They're toxins in your body that are stored. I really buy into this. This is not baloney. I think it's absolutely real. It's not in mainstream medicine. We're into more drugs and more surgery.
Sure.
But it's about cleansing, and it's about getting rid of what's already there.
So colonics?
Well, you know, people have their different ways of doing it. That could work for others. They're sweating. Their sweating is fabulous, and that's probably the best thing
about sweating.
Exercise.
Yes, let's talk about
sweating. Some people say just break a sweat every day, and that starts to lead you. But it's, you know, it's like something that's very full, and you need to let more out before you put more in, and you have to gradually get rid of all of these refined, chemically ridden foods that been eating. And then what happens at the end? Is it about losing weight? Maybe, but what it's really about is feeling good.
Yeah.
I mean, these things hurt your mood so amazingly. And I've seen this. I've experimented on the one human that I don't have to go to an IRB with.
Mike.
You're funny. Well, no, I don't experiment on him. He would never let me. Myself. He won't let me. Drinking a lot of water is good. Michael, are you listening? Are you drinking?
He's right out there listening.
We're talking about my wonderful, brilliant scientist husband, Michael Ruff.
And what kind of scientist is he, Michael?
He's a great scientist. He's an immunologist, virologist, and I'm more of a neuroscientist. So a lot of my work in the last 20-some years was the pairing up of the Ruff and Pert team. So in the early 80s, this psychoneuroimmunology, I mean, we basically were part of this group of science, small group of scientists that realized, duh, the brain, the glands, and the immune cells are actually connected, and connected by a network of shared receptors, not just the opiate receptor and the Valium receptor, but virtually every receptor that you could find anywhere in brain was also in the body, and realizing that, you know, we actually use the term body-mind now without the hyphen.
Ruff and Pert, what a nice thing. I mean, when you have a partner, when you have a partner that you could travel with, that you could think with, that you could work with, it's such a beautiful thing. Tell me something, you know, I mean, I know Mike's not listening. What do you love most about him?
That would be too X-rated.
Come on, just give me, let's go beyond the X-rate. What do you love next about him?
His sense of humor.
He's a funny man.
He can be very, very funny. And, you know, if you really want to feel good, humor. And
then you are a friend of Cousins, right? Your Cousins went that whole path of humor and the importance of humor.
Yes, and he called it internal jogging. But I've been thinking a lot about it. I mean, one of the interesting, you know, you opened with the trauma. And, you know, I have talked about how your body is actually your subconscious mind. If Freud were alive today, I think he would utterly love it. I mean, I would have years ago thought that, you know, your subconscious mind is the back of your brain. But your subconscious mind is actually your body and, you know, this your spinal cord.
Mm.
And playing with input into your spinal cord. I mean, I think things that are deep are literally stored as patterns deep down in your spinal cord. That's why so many therapies from the classical American chiropractic to, polarity therapy, you know, massage, this manipulation of the spine just helps to facilitate the whole integration and the recovery of these, you know, traumas that really, you want to feel good. I mean, this is where my path has led, and I see it for everyone. People just are stuck. You mentioned that posture of when you're 4 and when you're 10. And people are stuck at their last core trauma. And if you can just gently go back there, and it doesn't even have to be conscious. It can be, you know, like my CD, Psychosomatic Wellness, it's actually there.
Really beautiful. I listen to it, and I watch you guide through it through a meditation.
Exactly. Guided meditations where you're just, it does not need to bubble up consciously. You may be lying on your back, falling asleep at night, and the work goes on, like the work goes when you're sleeping. But if you can get out of that 3-year-old person, for me, the 4-year-old personality that loves to grab control and get all freaked out, you're just happier, and you can dispel it. I mean, it can move. It really is an energy that's in your body that's blocked, that's mediated by all these little diodes and transistors, these receptors and the natural ligands for the receptors, and then you can just feel good after you get rid of that stuff.
We've done a lot of work here at the center that I work at with integrating the body-mind therapies, because we just found that the mind itself is just not enough. Thinking and talking and going over it without focus on the body, without being aware of the body, it makes all the difference in the world. And so the therapies we have are so much faster. to get down to it, you know, there you are. So let me ask you, Candace, this, and we've got just a couple of minutes, and we're with the very famous or infamous Candace Pert, other part of Puffin Pert. No, Riffin Pert? What's this?
Ruffin Pert.
Ruffin Pert. Oh, my God. I love that. How do you feel? I feel Ruffin Pert. You know, that sounds like a perfect description. I love it. Candace, this is such a big deal that you're doing. And you're going around. I know you're giving a workshop at the Open Center, right?
Yes.
Right? Which is already filled up. But they, you know, there's standing room only. You know,
I'm not sure. Maybe there's a few more.
Okay, you could always give a call and see if there's anything down there. You know, the Rolling Stones were in town at the Beacon Theater the other day for a one-day concert. It was a tiny little space. So there you are. There you are down there at the Open Center, and you're going all around giving these lectures and workshops and doing stuff like this. How do you like it?
Well, it changes at different times. It's certainly really educated me enormously. I feel that I learned way more from the people I was, quote, lecturing to than I gave them because, you know, through the last, particularly in the last 10 years, I've, you know, there were so many incredible organizations and, you know, interesting mystical peoples, you know, and I'm a scientist and I'm a good observer and I'm open-minded, but I'm also checking it out. So I've learned so much from it.
Well, how does it feel? I mean, how does it feel? Do you ever feel overwhelmed
exhausting.
From it?
I hate it.
I imagine.
I want to be in my lab. I want to be working on drugs that cure all kinds of diseases. This was always, Armand, this was always a sideline for me, really. I left the NIH to pursue the AIDS drug that I invented with Michael Ruff in 1986. And God willing, I think we're at the place where that can fully manifest so that I can go back to doing what I love the most, but I'm very interested in continuing, hoping to fund more research into this area and to, you know, keep watching it because it really is the new physiology, the new paradigm, and I think it offers tremendous hope for people everywhere to feel better.
There's a hum in this universe, you know. It's one that I feel, and I could sense, and I could sense that there's a motion that people make. There's a movement that we make as we learn and we get closer to whatever that thing is out there in the universe, you know, in ourselves and the universe inside us. And there are people. I think it's like having a ferry boat. And you're a ferry boat captain. You take people across the river. You take them and introduce them to themselves, you know. And through that, they find their own bigger self, as big as it gets. And I'm really, really happy that we have you on this path because you're bringing a big gift to people, Candace. My guest, Dr. Candace Pert, who I wish I could hang out with for about the next 5 years. Just mentioning names. I'll throw names at you. Hey, did you know this one? Did you know? And the name of the book is Everything You Need to Know to Feel Good or God. And the other book is The Molecule of, what was it? The Molecule?
The Molecules of Emotion.
The Molecules of Emotion. So down there this week, this Friday at the Open Center, and she's also got this beautiful, I'm going to play another piece from that, from the Psychosomatic Wellness CD, which are going to be donated to WBAI as soon as I get off and convince her. For our next fun drive, Candace.
Oh, great.
Would you like to be a part of the next fun drive?
I would love it. And that we did that in one of the stations in San Francisco.
Yeah, I'd love to have you here.
Home of the new speaker.
Yeah. Home of the new speaker. So we'll be back with you on Tuesday, my friends. Thank you so much, Candace, for being
Thank
here.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. It's CandacePert.com, P-E-R-T, to take a look at the website. And if you want to hear this program again, you can go to thepositivemind.com. You got any comments? I'd like to hear them. You can send them to me at armand@brainlink.com. Back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.